Monster Man, episode 271, Zagya to Zarin. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are doing the entire X chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Our first monsters are going to be a pair of monsters that have a single entry because not only are they not that different from each other, but they're sort of related concepts. And those are the Zagya and the Zagyi. I am pronouncing them that way because I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I've been told that the name Zagya is a play on the name Gygax. It's not exactly an anagram of Gygax. It's missing a G, and it's got one too many A's. But I can definitely see how you would kind of begin with your own name and make funny words from that if your last name was already Gygax. You know, I imagine you'd be pretty used to people thinking that your name sounded weird and exotic. The Zagya and the Zagyi are creatures from the positive and negative material planes, respectively. And as a result, they're kind of mirror images of each other. The Zagya generates energy, so when it's around somewhere, it sort of radiates this energy that can start fires, heat metal, and so on. By contrast, the Zagyi absorbs energy. So it rots materials, it cools things as it sucks the heat out of them, and ultimately it destroys items, you know, kind of similarly to the Zagya, but via a different mechanism. These two creatures have complex rules for what affects them, you know, what different types of attacks affect them, and this is all sort of like a little logic game based on figuring out what the explanation for their powers is, and then sort of trying to think, well, how would different abilities that are available affect those powers? I can see that being fun. There's a definite sort of puzzle monster element to them, and especially if you run into both of them and you kind of think, ah, well, this is like that previous one, and then you realize, oh no, it's slightly different, and then you realize, in fact, it's the reverse of the thing that we ran into before, so, you know, presumably whatever worked on the first one is not going to work on this one. They also have a very cool illustration, which definitely does a good job of making them look alien and otherworldly. It reminds me a bit of the better Modron illustrations. It has a kind of, I was going to say Virgil Finley kind of feel to it, but I think I may actually mean Hannes Bock. I don't know. It's got a kind of Weird Tales feel to it. And this definitely feels like a pulp magazine creature, like something that might appear, you know, in Astounding Science Fiction or something. These are definitely examples of that high weirdness D&D, you know, where the kind of fantastic trappings are gone and we're really dealing with strange sci-fi monsters. They fit in well with the Beholder and things like that. You can definitely see this turning up in a kind of Sword and Planet story. I mean, I think there are fantasy authors who would have them appear, but they're not the kind of thing you would encounter wandering around the landscape. And in fact, it says that, you know, adventurers are most likely to encounter them when they'd be kind of summoned and bound into place as treasure guardians by wizards of some kind. I like that. You know, there are some planes that are very kind of relatable to daily experience. So, for instance, the elemental planes. Like, when you think of a creature from the elemental plane of fire, you pretty much know what you're going to get because fire is meaningful to us, right? We have an understanding not just of what fire is and what it does, but of what it kind of means dramatically. Then, by contrast, if you have a creature from, like, the positive material plane, is a lot harder to figure out what that's meant to represent. You know, I don't really know what I would expect the positive material plane to look or feel like. And the answer seems to be, it's weird, right? We're on some H.P. Lovecraft From Beyond stuff. Not the film, but the story. And, okay, yeah, I can get behind that. I like the idea that, you know, this weird alien from another plane really looks like a weird alien from another plane. Next up, we have the Zarin. Now, the Zarin is a bit like a Zorn, and I don't know if it's intended to be a Zorn gotcha monster or just kind of a variant Zorn. So, as you may remember, Zorns are creatures from the elemental plane of Earth, and they come to the prime material plane looking for gemstones and things to eat. And they're a bit of a nuisance, but also they can be useful because, you know, adventurers like gemstones and probably don't want the Zorns to eat them all up. Well, the Zarin is the same, but it eats metal, and it has like a hierarchy of whatever its favorite foods. You know, most of all, it loves iron, and then, you know, if it can't get any iron, it'll have whatever. Goes down this list. And it particularly loves magic metal. In fact, if it eats metal that is enchanted with like a magical bonus, that actually gives it additional hit points. Not just heals it, but it increases its total. That's the bad news, that it likes to eat, effectively, it likes to eat magic weapons and armor. And, you know, magic necklaces and stuff as well, if it can't get weapons and armor. Iron being its highest priority and all that. That's the bad news. The good news is that it's not that hungry of a monster. It doesn't need to eat an enormous amount each day in order to survive. And what that means is that sometimes if it gets its hand on some magic metal, it won't eat it right away. It'll save it because it, you know, it might need it tomorrow. So if it finds a bunch of magic daggers, it might eat the first one, but then the other ones could still be sitting in its burrow just waiting for some enterprising adventurers to come along, wallop the thing, and steal the magic daggers. It could also be useful because it does seem to be able to smell magic metal. So the Zarin's approach to a party is initially quite endearing, because what it basically does is that it comes up to the party and begs for scraps, right? Like it comes up and it like dances for snossages, and then if you give it a little bit of metal, then it's happy. But if it smells that you have magical metal, but you don't share, then it will get upset. And there's an 80% chance that it will attack the party. So that's less adorable. You know, 1 minute it's doing a snossage dance, and the next minute you're getting thumped. So they're basically what you get when you take a Zorn and you cross it with, you know, the most dreaded type of monster, the stuff damaging monster, like a disenchanter or a rust monster. And in that respect, they're fine. Just like with the Zorn, I'm not sure why a creature from the elemental plane of Earth would come to the prime material plane looking for minerals, which are presumably much easier to find on the elemental plane of Earth, but, you know, that seems like a nitpick. Again, this is a weird sci-fi monster, and I suspect that that is at least partly a consequence of us being in the X section, that we see a bunch of Strange-o monsters, right? There are not a lot of English words or English names. There are some, but they're not a lot. They start with X. And therefore, we tend to think of those kinds of words as being very sort of alien-sounding. By contrast, if you go back to, you know, the A or the D chapters, you'll see a dense concentration of, you know, monsters with recognizable names, right? Like, even leaving out all the individual kinds of demons, back in D, you've got demons and devils and daemons and dragons and dwarves and, you know. But here, no, it's just weird science fiction stuff. The Zarin is okay. I don't know that I could necessarily get into... I feel like there is something about the Zarin where its bizarre alienness kind of struggles against the relatively mundane motives that it has, because it's this strange creature that comes from another plane to our one, but ultimately it's just looking for a snack. You know, it's just the elemental plane of Earth equivalent of a herbivore. Just so happens that the thing that it eats is something that you want. It's a very Star Trek kind of monster, you know, where essentially you could try and figure out what it wants and figure out a way to get a supply of that thing to it without actually hurting it. And I guess that whatever, like, fun revelation can occur, I guess what that means is that sort of, like, the fun in a Zarin encounter comes from the moment where you realize, although it's weird and scary and alien-looking, it actually just wants something that's very relatable. So that's an example of a monster that can kind of really work once, maybe twice. You know, the second time you go, oh, I know what these guys are like. And after that, they're just kind of nuisances. But I think that there is some room for fun in the Zarin simply because it looks like it should be all crazy and weird. But in reality, it wants something quite simple and explicable. The downside to that is that because it looks like a Zorn, it's not a Zorn, but it does want the same thing as a Zorn, which is that it's hungry. So that revelation is probably out the door, since most D&D parties probably include at least one player who knows what a Zorn is, and indeed what a Zorn looks like, because they're very memorable looking. In fact, you know, just thinking about this, there was a recent episode of the D&D podcast, The Adventure Zone, which hinged on a Zorn occupying a mine and eating up all their gems and stuff, which the player characters did the same thing. They kind of negotiated with the Zorn and got it to go back home to the elemental plane of Earth. Which I think is kind of the end of the Zorn story, but again, something you can only really do once. The second time you do it, you're just grinding for rubies or whatever. Okay, that is about all the monsters that we have time for in this episode. In our next episode, well, our next episode is going to be a special episode about mounts, pets, and familiars. But in the episode after that, we're going to get started on the Why chapter of Monster Manual 2 as we take a look at the Yeth Hound here on Monster Man, a show about monsters. Because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.